Thank you, Anna, and thank you all for that wonderful blessing. Well, here we are again, ready for another round with John Philip Newell, Reconnecting with the Light, Chapter 3. It's a beautiful chapter, and it's filled with ideas about light. That beach on Iona at sunset. The architecture of the Temple of Light, built by the followers of Sri Aurobindo, just outside Pondicherry. And the symbol of light in Scripture itself, John 1. But the biggest and brightest connection in that chapter for me was the quote from John Dunn Scotus, who wrote that the light of God is the essence of all things. He broke through the paradigm of his era with his mystic's mind, and he forecast the discoveries of our own time as we reconnect with the light this morning. I mean, after all, we are the great, 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 great grandchildren of the Enlightenment, that great movement that overthrew Christianity 500 years ago. Phyllis Tickle, that legendary observer of Christianity, wrote that Christianity is an evolving faith. Its evolution, she believes, runs in 500-year cycles. Then it's upset, and the next cycle begins. She sees that we ourselves are on the cusp of this latest awakening. Her latest book is about emergent Christianity. She defines it as the age of the Spirit, in which we are called past mere belief now to the experience of the divine, the felt presence of God. In earlier cycles, our Judeo-Christian faith centered on God the Father, and then on God the Son. But here, today, we are beginning to engage with the living third part of the Trinity, God the Holy Spirit. It's a continuing maturation of our faith, which includes, but goes beyond, just intellect and logic and reason. It attempts to access the Holy Spirit through direct experience. Body, mind, and soul together, sensing and communing with the Spirit. Perhaps the institutional church and its habits of belief are not so much dying as being outgrown. So if it's not enlightenment or symbol or metaphor, how does this great reawakening actually connect with the light? Well, in English language, John 1:1 proclaims, "In the beginning was the Word," and how we have loved to talk about this over the years. In the French language, the Bible says it a little differently. It's a shocking difference. In the beginning was the verb, not the word, that great static concept, but the verb, a moving action. Well, after all, the word was first a sound. Sound is vibration, resonance, frequency. In Genesis, our tradition's ultimate authority on beginnings, out of the formless void came light. Light and sound as basics of biblical reality? Well, both are energy and just possibly the same energy. This created earth, in fact, is humming with energy. I'm pressing something in the background that is called the Schumann resonance. In 1953, Professor W. O. Schumann in Munich discovered that the Earth's atmosphere produces very specific pulsations, the vibrational pulse of the planet Earth. The Schumann resonance is not a composer's set of music. It's a set of spectrum peaks in the extremely low frequency portion of the Earth's electromagnetic field. It's generated and excited by lightning discharges in the cavity between the Earth's surface and the ionosphere, resonating in plasma waves that circle the Earth. You can see by this little diagram a few of the waves that they were able to isolate, but the major wave is the one that is called this Schumann set. In 1954, measurements were taken by Schumann and Dr. Herbert Koenig, who later became his successor, and confirmed that the Earth hums at a precise hertz of 7.85. Koenig compared human EEG recordings with these natural electromagnetic fields in our environment and discovered that there was indeed a correlation between the Schumann resonance and brain rhythms. They're very close to the alpha frequency of the human brain, a dreamy, idling kind of state. In the years to follow, investigators worldwide began to research what had been dubbed this Schumann resonance, this waveguide formed by the EM frequencies of the Earth's surface and ionosphere. Here, you're listening to the binaural beat carried in the modulated tones of a synthesizer. So these are the low elf beats of planet Earth. I'm going to continue playing it softly in the background so that you can just remember that you are in fact made of and suspended in energy 24/7. Now, within the last few years, physicists have converted sound waves into light radiation, with sound waves moving at frequencies 100 million times faster than the human ear can detect. This suggests that sound and light are a continuum of the same basic energy. Light is beginning to look like the basic stuff of the universe itself. Simply stated, light is nature's way of transferring energy through space. But the thing to remember is that light is energy. The word that scientists use for light is an electromagnetic radiation. On this little graph, we can see that the part of that energy radiation our eyes can see is rather small. It's full of the colors in the center. This is the optical spectrum. But on all sides of it are other light waves, gamma rays, X-rays, ultraviolet and ultra-red waves, and radio. But they're all just light, a continuous range of energy. Now, it's odd to think of quantum physics and relativity as an older paradigm, but actually, they only pointed to the reality that it's becoming our paradigm. It's all about energy coalescing into form. And at the very highest, most subtle apex of these energies is psychoenergetic consciousness itself, underlying all energy and phenomenon. The mystics' notion of divine mind as matter, John Scotus's old quote, is becoming the insight of leading-edge science. In his book, Vibrational Medicine, physician Richard Gerber, actually describes all matter as frozen light. Light which has been slowed down and become solid. A quantum physicist would say that light in this context doesn't slow down. It just continues to travel at the speed that light travels. But rather, the light's photons get absorbed. The energy gets transferred. Gerber points out that atoms, after all, are primarily open space, and we kind of remember that from our own classroom teaching. The real estate of our bodies looks solid, but it's filled with vacant lots. What fills them, Gerber says, are packets of light that sometimes act as matter. So our bodies, with their characteristics of slowed down light, exist as bundles of energy waves. The body is an energy field made up of segments of vibration. We are beings of light, literally. But there's lowercase light and there's uppercase light. Lowercase is the three quadrants of this graph. It is the incoherent phases of naturally occurring light waves running in all colors and speeds. Everyday physical reality is what we see in a flashlight beam. Light, with capital letters, on the other hand, the one in the lower right-hand quadrant, is not a bunch of light waves. It's a singled-out light wave by scientists who have learned how to create laser light. They choose a single light beam, rather weak, but single, unobstructed, simple light. Put it in a box and bounce it between mirrors. And every time it bounces off a mirror, it begins to gain speed. It bounces and bounces and bounces and comes out at such a perfect order that it can cut through anything. William Tiller says that the shift from incoherence to coherence can bring dramatic effects. A 60-watt light bulb, whose light waves could be made coherent as a laser's, would have the power to bore a hole through the sun from 90 million miles away. Now, there's consciousness and there's consciousness. Small, capital consciousness is our everyday awareness and volition, which is mostly reactivity, capital R. Our uppercase consciousness is a shift from that sleepwalking state into an awareness turned to stronger, those subtle energies of higher consciousness, an awareness that moves in phase with the wavelength of spirit. The consciousness, say, of Jesus of Nazareth. This current cycle of Phyllis Tickle's Great Awakening is calling us to reconnect with light in its uppercase phase. Not just believing in the light, but moving in phase with its living power, practicing the presence of light in our everyday lives. So I'd like to tell you two stories about reconnecting with the light that shifts us from believing in the light to living with the light. The first is the story of healing touch. It's the story of Janet Mentgen and her astonishing creation of healing touch. Janet was an Episcopalian woman, a highly trained nurse, emergency room training, general hospital nursing, professor of nursing, etc. But she was also an energetically sensitive nurse. She had healing in her hands. She saw the positive effect of touch while using various energy techniques, and she began using her energy-based healing skills in all her work in 1980. The results began to draw notice from both patients and hospital professionals. Healing touch emphasizes compassionate, heart-centered care, in which the provider and client are equal partners in facilitating wholeness. This is not curing, but it's reconnecting with our innate wholeness. Healing touch restores harmony, energy, and balance within the human energy system and supports the self-healing process of becoming whole in body, mind, and spirit. It complements conventional health care and is now used increasingly in collaboration with other approaches to health and healing. Healing Touch became a clinically certified program for nurses, and it spread quickly across the U.S. And within 10 years, Janet Mentgen had revolutionized the medical model of nursing to include a clinical approach to energy-based therapies. In another 10 years, one of her colleagues, Linda Smith, developed a second model of Healing Touch for churches because, as she said, after all, healing really began in the early church. Spiritual healing touch is slowly spreading into communities of faith across the country. At my parish, at All Saints by the Sea, every other Sunday morning, we sit and stand in a form of healing touch. We call it sharing the healing prayer. presence. It's a short version of healing touch that reconnects us with the energies of light in its healing phase, remembering that our bodies are vibrating fields of energy that can get out of order, that we can ask for ourselves or act as an ally and focuser for a friend to draw the flow of healing energy that's always available when two or more are come into spiritual sync in the name of Christ and hold out a specific need or intention to the presence of Spirit. Now, let's have a little experience of what happens in the healing presence. I wonder if you'll put your notes aside just for a minute. Sit with your both feet are on the floor. We're not closing our eyes or anything like that. What we are, though, doing is moving into an internal sense of our own bodies. And if you want to close your eyes to do this, it may help you to focus. I want you to see if you can sense in various parts of your body the actual energy that's shimmering throughout your entire frame. Let's start with the soles of your feet. See if you can feel just the slightest shimmer of energy or presence where your feet touch the floor. Then move up to your legs. Any sense of a little feeling, a little buzz or shimmering? Move up the back of your spine. Many of you will get a little, ooh, there's a feeling. That's the energy of your body. Move it up over your head, round to the skin and bones of your face. You'll be able to feel something like that on your cheeks, perhaps on your forehead. Down now to the front of your body. Focus on your chest, your heart area. You can certainly feel that heartbeat. Down to your belly. Big set of sensors there. And finally, down your arms to your hands. It's your hands that carry this amazing amount of healing energy. You are wired with it, whether you know it or not. So feel your palms. Can you feel a slight tingle? And don't worry if you can't, because you are going to in a minute. Put your hands together, palm to palm, like this. And with them pressed close together, begin to rub them back and forth vigorously, briskly, back and forth, back and forth. Building up what you feel here, a little warmth, a little heat. This begins to happen when we activate the center of our palms with its healing delivery system. Now stop. Feel your hands. Ah, now you can feel it. That's that energy. Press the space together between your hands and see if you can feel the energy ball between them. You may be able to move your hands out and still feel it. At some point, you will have lost it, but come back and just feel that energy ball. Your hands are now in sync and delivering energy while it's still flowing. Put one of your hands on your heart and the other hand on wherever your body could use just a little bit of energy. I often go to a knee or a hip, but just for this moment, breathe into the heart where your hand is resting. Breathe deeply and rhythmically in, two, three, and then out, two, three. Continue that rhythmic breathing, and you may be able to feel the pulse moving between your two palms, because you set up a small circuit right here that's of activated energy flow. You have now connected with the light in every cell. The second story I'd like to tell you about reconnecting with and using the light is the story of a group of musicians who live and teach by staying in tune with the intelligence of their hearts, who have reconnected with the light through heart coherence. In the hallowed spiritual writings of the Philokalia, page after page calls for us to let the mind, sorry, that was your hands, to let the mind descend into the heart. Put the mind in the heart is the refrain that occurs again and again, page after page. It is specific and unvarying. This is the process of enlightenment and divine union. This, mind in the heart, and no other from those ancients. For them, the word, for us, the word heart has come to be associated with emotion rather than the operations of the mind. But in ancient times, it meant the opposite. Not the soap opera drama and passion that we associate with the Hallmark heart today. That sort of agitation and emotion were associated with the liver in olden times, an excess of bile in the ancient mind. For those ancients, the heart's native language was the perceptivity of deep feelingness and subtle sensing of authenticity and truth. Today's science confirms that ancient understanding. We can see displayed in EEG and EKG measurements and brain scans the shift into a mode of feeling and thinking where meaning, insight, and clarity come together in a flow of higher level understanding, far beyond our superficial yet reactive ego self, which is our habitual mode of living. In the Santa Cruz Mountains, a center of research and practice is formed around this small group's deep belief and practice that the ancients were living right, training the mind to listen to and be guided by the heart's intelligence. They themselves are not scientists or priests, but a group of musicians, jazzmen, and natural philosophers, brilliant and tough intuitives from the South, who staked their lives on the Philokalia's command to put the mind in the heart. Over the last 25 years, they've built a remarkable center to research and teach and legitimize their insights. It's the Heart Math Institute. And since all evolution and human intelligence come from the heart, I find myself talking about them in almost every subject that I teach. Their work is entirely about the energies and intelligence of the heart that not only entrain the brain into much higher function, but also calm and uplift those around us as a natural consequence of that entrainment. In much the same way that we are energetically composed of naturally fluctuating and incoherent light waves, remember those three quadrants of ordinary light, our heart and brain are also naturally incoherent, not in phase, at least not at this stage of our lives. We spend our lives on the left side of this chart, where we live in Eric Fromm's age of anxiety, or alarm, or worry, or pressure, or pushing. It assumes that particular signature, a little jacket, down and up and down. If we were to put each of your fingers in a saddle of the biofeedback machines that HeartMath works with nowadays, this is probably what our signature looks like. Our culture assumes that the brain is superior in intelligence to the heart. But the heart, which is filled with brain cells itself, always trumps the brain. If we use our conscious ability to shift from the angst-ridden survival programs of our lower brains and rest in the safety and appreciations of the heart, an entirely new chemistry of intelligence arises that entrains the brain with the heart. So you see on the left side our normal everyday signature, that incoherent signature. And you see what happens when the mind and consciousness have deliberately focused themselves through the heart's brain cells, through the heart's intelligence. It pulls it together the way the laser machine does light, and a coherent sine wave emerges. It opens up the phenomenal frontal lobe capacities of the cortex, which are largely unused, to endless arrays of new understanding and creativity. The heart and brain are wired to remain connected, and the safety and coherence of that state begins to move immediately into the electrical magnetic fields, the EM fields, around the body to touch those around us. The Dalai Lama says, "Our world and our lives have become increasingly interdependent, so that when our neighbor is harmed, it affects us too. Therefore, we have to abandon outdated notions of them and us, and think of our world much more in terms of a great us, a greater human family. It's all about energy. It's all about reconnecting to the light." So I would like to lay out for you the basic practice, the core practice of the HeartMath team. This is one that I learned clear back in 1997. They call it the freeze frame technique. It freezes that old habitual back to that anxious state when we have deliberately shifted it into the heart. We keep it there. We freeze frame it there until we begin to move into entrainment and see things differently. So I'm going to just give you a 3-minute freeze frame run through so you have something to take home with you from this story, the second story. So I'd like you just to perhaps go inside again. It may mean that you'll close your eyes, but just focus on my words and collaborate as sincerely as you possibly can with them. So I want you to bring to mind whatever is the current nudge in your life. What's bugging you? Just one thing. Just take one. Simply find which one it is and understand it. Give it a name. This is the thing. This is the issue. And identify now, because it's the hole in the donut, all of the feelings that you have around it. So this is the piece you're going to be taking into your heart. Now, you've already done that work. You don't have to keep thinking it and thinking it. Leave it alone. You've identified it. It's hovering there, believe me. Now, focus your attention on the area of your heart. I would suggest that you put your hand over your heart just to guide your actual attention. And I want you to breathe in that slow, deep rhythm that we were using a while ago. Imagine your breath is flowing in and out of your heart, in your chest area. So breathe on a count of perhaps 5. In, 1, 3, 4, 5. Out, 2, 3, 4. In, 2, 3. Now as you're breathing, that issue is still there. What do you know? You didn't have to think about it, but it's still there. Now, I want you to make a sincere attempt to bring a memory, a feeling, into your heart space now. A positive feeling, such as appreciation for something, or care for someone, or something in your life. Perhaps a flower that's just bloomed in your garden. A phone call from a friend, whatever it is, don't just identify it with your mind. What's the feeling that that engendered in you? And allow that feeling of just appreciation. Oh, that was so nice. Let that flood your heart. Continue that heart breathing. And now you have freeze-framed another chemistry. Hold that chemistry of positiveness and appreciation. And look up to, oh yes, the problem. That is still there. It hasn't gone away. But is there a slight difference in the way you're seeing it? Or perhaps a new possible next step is suggesting itself. Allow yourself to let an insight bubble up. Whatever it is, it may be so slight that it is, put it off till next week. Good. But it's authentic. Whatever comes out of this space is authentic. And then resolve to test it out yourself. And then do it. All right, so that's the core of Heart Math Freeze Frame process. It feels awkward. All practices feel awkward when we start them. But trust me, I was the most awkward in the place in 1997. Everybody else could get their heart into a sine wave but me. And finally I said, could I just... Well, actually, there are three other people besides me. But everybody else, it was a group of about 15, and it felt, you know, as if I was sticking out like a sore throat. So I said, could I just practice during lunch hour? And they said, sure, Pat, come just take the time you need. So I sat down, and I thought about good things. It made no difference to the little heart rate. But lovely things. I'm walking through the loop. Thinking it doesn't do it. Then I began to think of things I really loved, and my mind just stuck, oops, on one of my twin daughters, Amanda. Suddenly, I remembered her as a baby, and oh, Lord, she was cute. Red-haired, dimpled, adorable, and I thinking to myself, oh, she was so cute. Oh, Amanda. I opened one eye, I looked at the screen, and oh, I'm in a sine wave state. Ah, it's that feeling. We're so mental that we can sustain an idea forever, and God knows we do, and it's very hard to leave it and forgive it. Sustaining this felt state, you're wired for it. All your brain is wired for it, and so is your heart. In fact, it is a superior program. It's all remembering, hanging on to anxious things. But you must practice this feeling state. You must listen with the heart. You must see with the heart. So remember, here are the steps. Acknowledge the issue clearly. Clarity is important. And then just let it hang there, because believe me, your mind's going to hold on to it. Then move into that heart-focused breathing until your whole body knows that you're doing this. Then activate a positive or renewing feeling. Really activate it until you're just thrumming with it. Then ask the question about this problem again and see what this state brings to you. And then don't betray it. Be honest with it and act on it and see where it takes you. So that is the core of the heart math process. Sustaining that entrainment develops a state of heart coherence that naturally affects those around you. If you add a clear and steady intention to this space that you created, you may begin to affect reality itself. Just across the hills, the Santa Cruz Hills, on the other side, in Silicon Valley, is Stanford University. One of its emeritus professors is Professor William Tiller, who has collaborated with HeartMath to run experiments with intentional heart coherence. For a total of 10 trials on different days, the heart rate variability of 5 trained practitioners was used to indicate when a practitioner was in that entrained state. While holding a vial of DNA solution in the left hand, the practitioner was asked to focus on the water and intentionally alter the DNA state of winding for a period of 5 minutes. There was a statistically significant difference in the intentionally treated water compared to controls. Now, it was interesting to note that for this study, the necessary conditions for success were twofold. The practitioner had to be in a coherent mode of heart function, that sine wave, and the practitioner had to intend as clearly and directly as possible to influence the DNA's winding state. If either of these conditions was absent, then there was no change in the UV, the ultraviolet absorbance of the DNA solution. So what can be deduced from this study is not only that intention is important in producing such a psychokinetic effect, but that, one, the physiological state of the practitioner plays a key role in the process. The actual experience is important. and two, the inner self-management discipline developed by these practitioners allowed an easy entrance into this state of body coherence, which in turn provided multiple electrical and chemical benefits for the body. Well, we've taken a sort of lateral excursion into the light this morning. We've explored these two practices of reconnecting with the light, with the deep skills of healing touch and heart coherence. They are not just personal practices. They are spiritual practices, and they are social practices. We might say they are holistic practices because they affect the whole, literally the whole. Now, here is a picture of this maverick scientific genius, William S. Tiller. I urge you to go online and look him up. He has scandalized the scientific community, but note that he was never fired from Stanford. He continued to be the chair of his department for 40 years. So he is a very remarkable scientist who began to meditate in the 1970s. You know, it's what we all did. In the 1970s, I began to meditate, not because I got any help from my churches. I went to the Presbyterians, I went to the Episcopalians, I went to the Catholics. Nope. Sorry, I can't help you there, but we can give you something about petitionary prayer, etc. TM came to town, and that's how I first learned to meditate. I'm not sure how Tiller and his wife began to meditate. What I do know is that they probably came at it about the same way you did, seriously, with interest, and followed up what insights began to flow for them. And the insight flow for Dr. Tiller was to look at physics in much of the same terms that we are looking at them this morning. He became obsessed with coherence and incoherence. And he attributes the energy and the astonishing direction that his other half of his life took from this daily connection to this larger, mute intelligence that expresses itself through our own discovery systems. Well, he identified and experimented with natural human incoherence, that state of our everyday understanding biology, and human coherence, that inner reach to become centered, still, and positive, and open to the higher mind, and then sustain it as a continuous state of being. Those are both energetic states. And having looked at all these odd pictures this morning, I think you can picture it in your own minds now. One state is out of phase. That's the lower state, the bundle in the middle. The other state is in phase, the one that's creating that axis, those even pulses that are slowly drawing the hash of the incoherent state into some kind of ball of order around it. Tiller maintains that they're meant to be lived out together as what he calls a coupled state. I want you to take that term home with you this morning, a coupled state. He understands that the human condition is what it is. He says that while we've evolved to our incoherent state, we are also wired to move into a coherent state, that we need to learn to live in that coupled state, both states alive in us, with the higher, the heart state, entraining the lower in a healthy state of wholeness. Now, this is not a new idea. It's one of the perennial philosophies, as above, so below. But it takes on a different character when we begin to look at this through the lens of our own time. But actually, it's even older than the perennial philosophy. Last week, I visited Frank Lloyd Wright's Taliesin West in Phoenix and found an ancient petroglyph that symbolizes this idea of a coupled state. Look at the figure that's on the far left, second one in. Do you see it? It looks like two hands, one coming from the top with his fingers curled under, and another hand reaching from below, that lower incoherent state perhaps, wrapping its fingers around the other hand and holding and holding. I don't know how long they've been holding this petroglyph on that stone, all of these hundreds of thousands of years. It's a wonderful picture. But it's one that so touched Frank Lloyd Wright that he has used it as the logo for Taliesin West. Here it is, the coupled state in a cinnabar red square. Tiller and Wright, each in his own way, acknowledge the imperative for this reconnection to the light. To shift into that coupled state that entrains the patterns of the lower to the coherence of the higher. Here is another look at the biblical scriptural symbol that we started the chapter with as we've been reconnecting to the light. But we read John 1, 9 to 10 a little differently, with the notion of coherent energy under our belts. The true light that gives light to every man, remember, in all your cells, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, but the world did not recognize him. We are young and rather violent bearers of the light. We're only just beginning to realize the larger reality beyond our egocentric illusions. But some of us are willing to learn these ancient yet new practices of the heart and mind to deal with this new psychoenergetic reality of consciousness. Einstein wrote 7 decades ago, "Everything is energy, and that's all there is to it. Match the frequency of the reality you want, and you cannot help but get that reality. It can be no other way. This is not philosophy. This is physics." Now, that matching requires 3 qualities. Staying consistent, coherent, and connected to the light. So it looks as if reconnecting with the light puts us squarely in a new emerging paradigm that has an enormous bearing on our evolving faith. To the mind of faith, matching the frequency of the reality we seek means tuning ourselves to the wavelength of the Holy Spirit, the third aspect of the Trinity that seems to be unfolding into today's culture. So, let's close this main portion of our excursion with the light this morning with the prayer that devout, maverick scientist William Tiller prays every day. He shared it in one of his interviews, and I wrote it down and then made a little slide for us. He says that he goes through these assertions 3 times per line every day as part of his coming into sync, as part of his becoming coherent, as part of his deliberately learning to live within that coupled state of lower incoherence and higher coherence. So I'm going to ask you to join with me, and we'll say this together 3 times for each line. We're going to take our hands and place them on the energy centers where each one of these sources of wisdom pours through. So we'll begin with the heart. Our Creator's love flows through me into this world. Together. Our Creator's love flows through me into this world. Our Creator's love flows through me into this world. Now the throat. Our Creator's will flows through me into this world. Our Creator's will flows through me into this world. Our Creator's will flows through me into this world. Now to our brow, the third eye. Our Creator's light flows through me into this world. Our Creator's light flows through me into this world. Our Creator's light flows through me into this world. And finally, on our crown, our Creator's wisdom flows through me into this world. Our Creator's wisdom flows through me into this world. Our Creator's wisdom flows through me into this world. Now place your hands on your heart one last time. Breathe into your heart and listen to the heartbeat of the earth. We are literally children of the light. It's pulsing around us and in us. God is not out there. We find God's true guidance in the moment, on the instant, within ourselves, when we are listening at the center of our hearts, which pour out into electromagnetic waves around our body 3 feet, 6 feet, 15 feet. We are sitting in each other's light waves. How we feel, as the Dalai Lama says, is affecting our neighbors, and the way they feel is affecting us. This is the paradigm that our faith is growing into as we reconnect with the light that John Newell says is rebirthing Christianity. Thank you very much. And when we get back, I'll tell you how this all can become very slowly a program within an actual church. So we'll pick up the conversation when we come back. See you in 20 or 25.